Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, Google Play, TuneIn, anywhere that you get podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls. Email us with any basketball questions or advertising inquiries at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken. I don't have Cody with me today. We are doing a Locked On Podcast Network crossover episode. I spoke with Chris Manning, who is a writer at Fear the Sword, which is a great Cavs blog, and he hosts the Locked On Cavs podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, which you should go check out. We talked a lot about kind of what the Cavs are going to be able to do, you know, to defend their title, you know, what's going on with J.R. Smith's contract situation, you know, how the Bulls might, you know, get the three alphas situation to work, you know. We talked about a lot of different things, as well as the Central Division, how some of those other teams stack up, the Pacers, the Pistons, the Bucks. It was a good conversation. It runs a little over a half hour, so it's a little bit longer than usual, but it was a good conversation, and, you know, we're going to have more crossover episodes later. I've got one coming up with the Heat guys tomorrow, which I assume is going to be a lot of Dwayne Wade talk, and then we've got one with Locked On Knicks with Jared Dubin at the end of the week, which is going to be about a lot of different things. Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Robin Lopez, you know, all different kinds of stuff. But until then, enjoy this episode with Chris Manning. All right, welcome to a Locked On Podcast Network crossover episode. I'm Sean Hyken, co-host of Locked On Bulls. With me today, Chris Manning, host of Locked On Cavaliers. We're going to talk a little Cavs, little Bulls, little Central Division. It's going to be interesting. These are kind of two of the more interesting teams in the division, and certainly for different reasons, Chris.
Yeah, I 100% agree. They've been playoff opponents before. I think There's definitely a rivalry there. There's even a dislike there, even if some of the guys from those Thibodeau Bulls teams that didn't really get along with LeBron are gone. But I think there's something there still, and I think there are two teams that they're gonna just play each other so many times and maybe have some funky outcomes that I think is gonna kind of be interesting to see how they match up, even if it's not the way we might have expected it to be last year or the year before.
Right, and then there's also the LeBron and Wade dynamic, too. Those guys are obviously very good friends. They won two titles together in Miami. And then since then, you know, they've been on different teams, and now they're in the same division, so they're going to play each other four times a year.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised, to be honest, that wasn't, like, I know the Cavs-Warriors is just such a big thing, but I was kind of surprised, that wasn't, like, a Christmas game or something, just because it's just a showcase game, and it would have been a little just kind of fun, but also Cavs Warriors is obviously great, and in Cleveland it's pretty great because it means I get to cover it instead of having to watch it on my TV. But it's going to be weird to see Wade in that Bulls uniform and weird seeing them interact when it's not Wade with the Heat or them together or anything. Like, it's going to be a new twist on that rivalry and the friendship, because I think they would both admit that even though they're really good friends and, like, LeBron orders him dinner and knows what to order him for dinner better than his wife, like, there's still, like, a competitiveness there, and I don't think Wade would be happy if the Cavs beat the Bulls all four times this upcoming season.
No, I think you're right. And honestly, it's still, as someone who covers the Bulls, it's still a little bit weird that Wade is here, because when, you know, in the first week of July, when, you know, you started hearing Wade was at odds with the Heat front office about their contract talks, and he was going to go out and talk to other teams. My first reaction, and I'm sure this was probably yours, and it was pretty much everybody's that I talked to, everybody's reaction was, yeah, okay, that's cute. He's going to go out and try to talk to other teams to get leverage. He's going to end up back in Miami. I didn't realize it was actually going to be him really leaving to go to a different team, let alone the one that I cover, until even after it was reported that it was going to happen. The press conference wasn't until the end of July, and when I was there and I saw him hold up the number 3 Bulls jersey, and I was just like, okay, this is actually happening.
Yeah, I was the same way. I mean, I remember the day the NBA store Twitter account tweeted out the jerseys, and I was like, that's not real.
Right.
Like, that's Photoshop. That is, like, clearly a Photoshop. And this is weird that I think it's not even going to set in until maybe not even the first game, but maybe when he actually plays the Heat, and it's like, oh, it's really Wade in Miami or something, and he's not wearing the Heat jersey, and that's
right when they do the video tribute, yeah. And that comes pretty early in the season. I believe November 10th is the first game that he's going to play against the Heat. That's, I think that's the only time. They play in Chicago twice. They only play in Miami that one time.
Yeah, I wonder what it's going to be like to when he goes back, just because it doesn't seem like it's the most friendly relationship. It doesn't seem like him and Riley are on exactly the best terms after leaving. So I it'll be interesting to see how he goes back, because you think the fans would receive him really well.
Oh, yeah. Well, but I think it's a little bit. I mean, there's still a little bit of, you know, tension with the organization. But if you look at, like, after he signed with the Bulls, Mickey Arison wrote this big open letter thanking him. And then they had, like, Dwayne Wade Day in Miami. And he was writing that, like Mickey Arison's, like, post on the website was that, you know, one day we're going to retire his number 3 jersey at American Airlines Arena. Like, clearly, I think this is not, like, a typical, you know, superstar leaves a team that he's been with for so long and you know, the fans boo him. I think the Heat fans are not mad at Wade. At least the ones I've talked to are not mad at Wade for leaving. They're mad at the organization for letting him leave, basically. I think most of the fans get it.
Yeah, and I think that's the pretty rational, fair opinion, just because it did seem very much like Wade wanted to be back. And yeah, he had every right to go get leverage. I mean, he had every right to use a team like the Nuggets to try to drive his price up.
See, that was the part that was interesting to me, was because the Chicago thing makes sense on some level, yeah. Because he's from this area. His mother is a pastor in Chicago. She's a really big part of this community here. He has ties here. He talked pretty seriously with the Heat with the Bulls in 2010 when him and LeBron and Bosch all signed in Miami. They were, you know, Chicago was one of the teams that was kind of considered the front runner to get one of those guys. They had some familiarity with each other. As soon as, you know, when it came, like, when he was talking to, you know, these other teams, I was like, okay, you know, I could see Chicago on the off chance he does leave. I could even see New York just because Carmelo's there and that's his boy. And it would make a little bit of sense, but like, and even, honestly, even Milwaukee, just because he played at Marquette. But when, like, Denver was in there, it's like, there's no way.
Yeah, it was so clearly, like, I'm going to use this team as leverage to make it seem like I'm going to leave. And they can pay me all this money. And, like, what, you should pay me this money and stuff. But, I mean, him in Denver, I guess, would have been even, like bizarro world NBA signings. I just can't, like, picture him really still in a Bulls uniform. I just can't even imagine, like, watching him play with Moutier and Jokic and, like, Gary Harris. Like, I just, in my head, that just, it just seems so bonkers that was even, like, for a second out there. I would, like, love to have been a fly on the wall in that meeting. Maybe more than, I mean, obviously we'd all want to be in on the KD, the pigeons and stuff, although we've heard enough about them. But to be, like, on the fly on the wall and just sit in and watch the Nuggets D Wade meeting, I would love to know what they talked about, because he even,
well, apparently Mike Miller was a big part of their recruiting.
Mike, base, yeah, they're boys. That's a yeah, guy that they're boys.
Everybody, well, I mean, everybody loved. I mean, yeah, obviously, I'm sure you read the Jonathan Abrams profile about Mike Miller from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
In Grantland. He is, like, the most beloved teammate basically in the history of the NBA. He and LeBron are still close. He went to Cleveland with him when LeBron went back. He was in Miami with them for both of their 2 titles.
Yeah, him and James Jones could probably get busted in the Hall of Fame just for being really good humans and teammates. Because, like, no one ever says a bad thing about either of those guys.
Right? Yeah, no, exactly. And then you kind of see that with James. James Jones came back, didn't he?
Yeah, he's back. He's, like, making the veterans a minimum. I literally think as long as LeBron can convince him to just be in the locker room and, like, he feels like he doesn't have anything better to do, he's just going to come back. Because, literally,
sure, collect this $900K a year and guarantee, yeah, you know, go to the finals, yeah, every year for the next 5
yeah
years or whatever.
Yeah, and, like, literally everyone on that team loves him. Like, I mean, he's literally the only guy that Kevin Love has, like, Instagrammed about, which is, like, a really dumb thing to mention, but, like, Kevin...
No, that's not a dumb thing to mention, considering how big of a factor that is with the Cavs. Like, every single thing with Kevin Love's Instagram is, like, every single one of, like, until they won the championship, because obviously now that all of that stuff kind of goes away now that they won the title, especially when Love had that huge defensive play against Steph Curry in game 7. But before that, like, every single, like, so do you remember a couple, like, a week ago, LeBron posted the Instagram video of himself, like, singing happy birthday to, like, a Sports Illustrated cover of Kevin Love from when he was at UCLA, and it was really bad, like, off-key
and
singing.
He did the Simpsons laugh.
Right. And so if they hadn't won the title, that would totally be, like, that would have been a whole week of, oh, well, was he subtweeting Kevin Love? Was he making fun of him? Like, why couldn't he just, like, call it and say it to his face if he was just making fun of that UCLA picture? It doesn't mean he's going to get traded, but obviously that's all kind of out the window.
Yeah.
It seems pretty clear that the Cavs are going to just run this group back, which I think is the safe thing to do if you're David Griffin, because I still have questions about whether Kevin Love is a great fit for them long term. But if you're David Griffin, what you do is, you know, if you trade Kevin Love or you trade somebody else, like one of the other like main guys from this team that just won the franchise's first title ever, the first title in for a Cleveland team in 50 whatever years that it was, then it's, and then they don't win the title, it's, oh, well, they could have won the title if he had just kept the same group together. If they keep the group together and they don't win the title, it's, well, at least they gave this group another shot, now we can try something else.
Yeah, it's, they would have almost been in a similar position as like the Clippers are, where it's like we just wonder how many times they run that group back when there's not really any changes. Right. I mean, the Clippers have added, they got Mo Buckets, which is just wonderful for so many reasons. But
I actually really
I did too.
And I know we say this every year with some of these guys the Clippers sign, but I mean, Brandon Bass is solid. Allen Anderson, if he can stay healthy, is pretty solid. I don't think Raymond Felton is.
No, not at all.
He actually had a pretty solid. He had a pretty solid year for the Mavericks last year. So he's actually, you know, for a minimum as your third point guard behind Chris Paul and Austin Rivers, like that's not terrible, I guess.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's just like you know exactly what you're getting out of that team. Like they're gonna have a really. They're probably gonna have below average production from small forward because Luke Rabah-Mbute is their penciled in starter, Wesley Johnson or something. And but with like the Cavs. Winning sort of erases a lot of doubt, and then like the Warriors then getting Durant puts like it doesn't really takes a lot of the pressure off of them to actually have to go out right. And defend it next year. It's like if they win next year, it's another upset for LeBron. It's another thing where they overcame all this adversity. And if they had lost and then the Warriors get Durant, well, they're probably getting buried, and maybe Kevin Love is the reactionary guy you just try to trade for something. But and I kind of agree with you about the long-term thing, because I think they have to figure it. They either have to decide to make him a more organic part of the offense, or they just have to maybe move him in a year or something like that if they think that's the way to go, I guess. But it's going to be interesting to see how they sort of adapt this year, just because it's sort of the same team, but it's kind of not, because there are, I think, some little subtle differences that are going to play themselves out over
like 41 games. Well, the biggest one is Sasha Kondra.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how they're going to be able to fill that.
Yeah, I really don't know either. You lose an NBA champion, an NCAA champion like Sasha Kondra, who, you know, played such a big role. I don't know how you replace a guy like that.
So what's going to happen? When is JR going to sign his deal? Because he's going to be back at some point. It seems like that's what both sides want. They want him back. He wants to be back. Like, he's a Rich Paul guy, so obviously Rich Paul showed with the Tristan Thompson situation last year and with the Eric Bledsoe situation in Phoenix a couple of years ago that he's not afraid to drag it out to get his guy the deal he wants. Do you think, I mean, we've got a little under 2 weeks to go before camp starts. Do you think JR is going to be signed before camp, or do you think it's going to drag out into camp like Tristan did?
I'm going to guess into camp, but I only say that because I look at some of the clues that have been dropped. There has been so little news about this that there's just not a paper trail to follow. Mark Stein was really the first one about a week ago to put a figure on it at 13 to 14 million. And other than that, there's been nothing. We know there aren't. I also feel like if he was going to sign somewhere else, it would have already happened. Like, if a team was going
to... Nobody else has cap space left to give him the kind of deal that he
Well, I mean, like, a team like the Sixers or something, I think, has the money, but, like...
Yeah, but what the hell are the Sixers?
No, I mean, that's the point. Like, I would pay for the JR to watch the J.R. Smith, Joel Embiid reality show.
Oh, no, it'd be awesome, yeah. Especially... that might be the kind of thing Sam Hinkie would have done, just to be like, hey, why not? Let's see if this works.
Yeah.
But that's not the kind of thing I think that the Colangelos would do. I think Denver might still have to do it. But they also are not a team that would really have any use for J.R. Smith. Really, the only thing that would make sense is for him to go back. It makes sense for him because he's comfortable there. He gets to play with LeBron. They just won a title. He knows what his role is there. And it makes sense for them because they know what they're getting out of him, basically. And it seems like, I hate to use this word because it's such a cliche, but it seems like he genuinely has matured and really grown into accepting the role that he's had the last couple of years since he's been there.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think the guys in the Cavs locker room just love him. They support him. Like, LeBron has his back. And I think if you're a guy like with JR, we saw it in New York. We've seen it everywhere that he's played. You just have to believe in him and you get more out of him. And he just fits so well as just a guy who's just going to shoot and play decent defense. I just want to know what ultimately he's going to get, because I think both sides have leverage. Like, JR can say, you can't replace me, pay me this. The Cavs can say, well, no one wants to sign you, we'll pay you a little bit less. And I want to know how long it's going to be, because he is 31. It's not. I don't know if giving JR a 3-year deal at $15 million a year or something would be the most prudent thing, But I also.
But you have to.
Yeah,
do
I
it.
Know. Like, that's like, the thing. It's like you might just have to just pony up. They're already going to save money on the tax anyway. So tax money anyway. So it's not like it's going to be as expensive as it would have been a year ago. And so maybe just do
like
it.
It's like a much shorter. It's like a much smaller stakes version of. After, on the first couple of days of free agency, there was some concern trolling about the Mike Conley contract that Memphis got. It's like, is that going to be the greatest deal in the world in 3 years? No, but you got to do it.
Yeah.
You got to keep your
Exactly. I 100% agree. And I mean, and without GR, like you look at the Cavs' wing situation, I'm not a big Amon Shumpert guy for a lot of reasons. Like, I think he has the potential to be something, but he just hasn't shown it. And I wonder if he ever will in a meaningful way. And I know he's been hurt. Mike Dunleavy, who obviously, you covered in Chicago last year, is coming off a back
That's
injury.
That's right. Mike Dunleavy's on the Cavs
and,
now.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Yeah. And he could be really, really good. But it's, is his back good enough to let him be able to play over, over 100 games or whatever it'll end up being with the playoffs in the regular season? Can Richard Jefferson recreate that magic? And he was already better as a small ball four. Then you get into is Mo Williams going to actually play? Is Kay Felder able to play
as
a rookie?
Is he going to retire? Is Mo Williams going to retire? Because I read a couple weeks ago that he was thinking about retiring because he just kept having knee problems.
I kind of think he will, but just by everything I've read and just kind of just wouldn't make sense because, I mean, last year when he was hurt, it was literally because his knees were just worn down from playing basketball for 30 years of his life because he's just old. Like, and he's not even like old. He's just like played a lot of minutes and he's just been worn down. And it's sort of weird because I think I feel more confident in saying that he's going to retire. I would have about 2 weeks ago when they could have stretched him out, but they didn't do that. And I wonder now if they think, oh, he's going to come back. Because even if you are saving money on the tax, eating that money isn't really a great thing, especially if you have to go out and try to sign someone like Chalmers or Norris Cole or something like that if you don't feel Kay Felder's the option from the start of the season.
Right. Now, as far as the Dunleavy stuff goes, I mean, I honestly forgot that he was on the team. That's just how crazy this offseason has been. Like, you brought that up, and I was just like, oh, that's right. They did dump Mike Dunleavy to the Cavs to make room to get to do the Dwayne Wade deal. But Dunleavy, when he's healthy, he's really solid. He's not, like, a great individual, like, lockdown defender, but he, again, to use a cliche, term for a veteran defender, he knows where to be. He's a good three-point shooter. Like, he's... the Bulls, like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I posted a whole bunch of them and looked at a whole bunch of them when he had his back surgery before camp last year. The Bulls were such a better team with him than they were without him. And if he's healthy, he's going to be a good contributor for the Cavs. It's just a matter of, again, he's in his upper 30s. I think he's 35 or 36 right now. You don't know how healthy he's going to be, especially with a guy who had back surgery at that age. That's always a little bit worrying. But if he's healthy, I think he's actually going to be a good piece.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a perfect guy to play next to LeBron, right? I mean, he hits threes, and he doesn't need to dribble the ball at all. LeBron can run pick and rolls with Channing Frye, and he's going to have two knockdown shooters just waiting for him on bench units. I think he and Jefferson are sort of these inverse players that are going to be insurance for each other because if at least one of them can play, that's a huge, huge get, and it gives them a little bench depth that I think they're going to need, especially because, again, you don't have Dele, so you have to figure out something at point guard, figure out some shooting on the floor, and B, Shumpert wasn't great last year. He wasn't good, and he has to kind of be a little bit better, at least on offense, to kind of be effective, I think, just because he was not a good shooter last year. Teams were just not paying attention to him, and if Dunleavy's on the floor, especially if he's able to play some defense and move a little bit and just hit shots, he makes that less of a problem. Like he's a sneaky big part of what the Cavs are going to do this year, I think. It's a guy LeBron has wanted to play with a long time. 2 summers ago, when he went back to the Bulls, LeBron tried to recruit him, and it didn't work because he wanted to stay in Chicago.
Right, and, I mean, by the way, who's going to be the backup one now with Dele gone?
I mean, if Williams plays, I think he'll get the first shot. I think Kay Felder, they're very high on him from everyone I've talked
to. So they're going to let a rookie be the backup point guard right away?
Well, I mean, I'm of a couple mind of this because I don't watch a ton of college basketball because I think aesthetic.
I don't either. I'm the wrong guy to give you a Kay Felder scouting report. It's just for the defending champions to have, especially a guy with
I agree.
With the injury history that Kyrie has had. I mean, he's he you don't know that you're going to get 82 games out of
Kyle. No, and you're right. And I mean, and it's funny because I'm the same camp as you. So everyone I've talked to this week that is, so Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks and Dan Feldman from Locked On Pistons, they've been like, oh, I love Kay Felder. And like, and everyone I know that watches college basketball is like, Kay Felder's awesome. And I talked to his college coach.
Right, but there's he's like, awesome for like a college player who's like a second round prospect who could be good someday, or awesome for like ready to contribute right now on a team that has literally championship expectations.
No, and exactly. And I mean, I watched him in summer league. He was not hitting shots off the ball in the way that Dele did last year, and what made Dele so effective was that he was a shooter and not really a traditional one. I think it could be Felder. I kind of hope it's not, because I think I'd rather him get to play in Canton and just kind of develop a little bit. But if you're the Cavs, I also think they realize that their competition in the East, at least theoretically, it means they don't have to really gear up as much, and they can play the long game. They can develop Felder over the course of the year, and then maybe he's ready by the playoffs to do more. That's a little bit risky. I also think on bench units, I think there's a chance you see Shump as a nominal one, with LeBron doing more and more ball handling, and Shump just kind of defending ones and just at least slotting in at that spot, even if he's not really playing point guard.
Right, and so that's honestly sort of, I don't hate the idea of Shump as a one. He did that a little bit early on in his career when he was in New York, and it worked reasonably well before the knee injury his rookie year. But it's sort of like kind of what the Bulls have as far as their guard situation. Obviously, Rondo is going to be their primary point guard because he doesn't really a threat to score, so he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, setting guys up. But Jimmy Butler can handle the ball. Dwayne Wade can handle the ball. Even some of the other guys on the like Denzel Valentine, in college, he was a big ball handler. He's mostly probably going to play the two and the three, but they have a lot of options to do that.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see how the Rondo thing works, just because the peak Rondo was very good. The Rondo we've had the past couple of years has not.
Since the knee injury.
Yeah, really since the knee injury, and I think a little bit the way he plays in conjunction with an injury just hasn't really served him well as the league speeds up a little bit, and he needs to just be a little bit less reliant on dribbling the ball a bunch at the top of the key. He does like to pound the ball, and he does like to just kind of wait and watch things develop and point around and stuff. And he was really good at it, and it worked with those Celtics, but it doesn't work anymore. I kind of want to see how much Wade is kind of the lead ball handler a lot, because I think he could be a killer in that role. I think the most fun thing for Wade would have him to be, and I'm saying this selfishly because I think it would have been nuts to see him like spurn Riley to play with LeBron or something, but like him as like a just a lead guard just kind of killing opposing teams, I think could be really, really fun. But I also wonder how much he gets to do that when he's playing with ball dominant guys. And I also would like to see Jimmy Butler just try to do more, because I think it'd be good for him as he gets closer to his prime. It probably enters his prime this year to really get a chance to do that and maybe take that bigger step, and maybe that results in him being an even better offensive player than we've seen.
Well, Jimmy wanted to handle the ball a lot more last year. It was just kind of weird because they had him and Derek, and they both kind of need to have the ball in their hands. And that was why kind of what the Bulls did this offseason was so bizarre, because once they traded Derek, then it was like, okay, they're going to, you know, really just give the team over to Jimmy, and, you know, he's really going to get to run the show, and it's going to be his team, like, without a doubt. And then they go and sign Rondo and Wade. That's, like, two other guys that need to have the ball in their hand, and it's going to create the exact same set of problems, like, who gets the shots, who gets the touches, who gets to be the one to initiate the offense. And I guess, again, by default, it's going to be Rondo, because Rondo's useless when he plays off the ball.
Yeah, I mean, and teams would just not respect him at all if he's spotting up for threes or whatever.
Even though he shot, what did he shoot, 36% last year, and then he shot 35% from three the half season that he was in Dallas. So it's been trending well, but he's been a terrible three-point shooter his whole career. So, you know, I feel like I'm going to trust the 8 years where he was a terrible three-point shooter versus the 1.5 where he was league average.
Yeah, I'm with you. And so, I mean, I think the bigger question with all of this for me with the Bulls is, Hoiberg obviously is a guy that was put into a situation to succeed Thibs and win right away. That is obviously not, that has sort of changed, at least from the outside that has changed. And he's also a guy that was supposed to be speedier and more motion friendly. Do you see him being able to do that at all with this roster and this construction?
I think the hope is that with a different roster, they'll be able to do more of what Fred wants to do. Last year was kind of a weird situation because they brought in a new coach who was wanted to play an up-tempo offensive style, but they literally kept the exact same roster. I think just the two rookies, Bobby Portis and Cristiano Felicio, were the only two guys on the entire roster that weren't holdovers from the previous year. So they had a roster that was built around Tom Thibodeau's strengths. And, you know, maybe this was because management hated Tom so much that they just thought, okay, if we just bring in a coach that we do like, we can succeed with this same roster, but it's just a different coach. But I was looking at it, really only five guys on the roster. And that's Jimmy Butler, Doug McDermott, Nikola Mirotic, Taj Gibson, and Tony Snell. Only five guys on this roster were there when Thibodeau was there. So, like, it's pretty much a new roster. It's either, like, the guys that were on the team last year, besides those guys, were new to the team last year. That's Portis and Felicio. And then there's a bunch of guys who are new to the team entirely that, you know, Fred, you know, the hope is that he'll be able to mold them a little bit more in what he wants to do, because they're not so used to playing together for so many years, playing a certain way and then suddenly having to play a different way.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good way to put it. And it's interesting that they have sort of moved on from so many of those Tibbs guys relatively quickly. Obviously some...
Taj Gibson, last man standing.
Yeah, honestly. And I kind of forgot that they hadn't moved on from, just because I always felt like in my head, like, it made sense for them to maybe trade him and let some of those guys up front play a little bit.
They still might.
Yeah.
If this season goes off the rails, I would not be shocked if they traded Taj at the deadline.
And you could probably...
And that's a guy a lot of contenders
could use. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's not stretchy that is sort of in vogue as a forward, but he's a good rebounder. He's a smart defender. He can be really good in those type of smaller roles, and he's on a very affordable deal, especially under the new cap.
Well, only for one more year. He's going to get paid.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know if I'd want to be the team that gives him his next contract, because he's played through so many injuries.
That's true.
Like, but he's also just, like, he is the most, you know, you talked about James Jones being, like, the one guy that every single one of his teammates loves. Taj is that kind of guy in Chicago and has been for years. He doesn't complain. He doesn't complain about starting or coming off the bench. He plays through injuries. He was the biggest defender of Thibodeau after he got fired, but he was also the biggest defender of Fred last year. You know, he's very loyal. He's a team player. Like, he's every possible thing you could want in a teammate or a locker room guy. Taj is. He can play the four. He can play the five. He can defend. Like you said, he's not a stretch four by any means, but, you know, he can knock down, like, a 12-footer.
Yeah, I mean, and just having a guy like that, that teammates love, that teammates can respect, that is loyal and is going to help your locker room, that has so much value that it's just so hard to quantify terms of, like, you're looking at a box score, you're looking at Basketball Reference, and you can't quantify that, and that has a lot of value. And, I mean, if you look at the Cavs, you look at what they've said publicly and what has sort of come out after the finals. I don't know if you caught this, but Channing Frye was literally, when he got traded to the Cavs, there was these camps that had developed, and it's not really clear who was in what camp and whatnot. But he literally texted at the whole team and was like, let's go get dinner. And it was, like, the first time in months that it happened. And then you saw them hanging out.
Because he's, like, I remember this story, too. But, like, he's the new guy. He doesn't know, like, who the cliques are and who hangs out with who. So he's just like, hey, I just want to hang out with everybody.
Yeah, and so then the team, like, sort of gels and they go to dinner all the time together. And then they celebrated the finals together. And it seemed like they actually bonded in a way that you wouldn't have thought they maybe could, considering everything we read and heard about the drama in that locker room for a year. And, like, that stuff just matters. And Taj also went to the Bulls with the Bulls this year. He can play a role, and he's going to help guys like Denzel Valentine and Bobby Portis keep growing and getting into the league and becoming the next generation of Bulls.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's kind of the hope. But real quick, like, we're running a little bit long here, but just real quick, like, outside of the two teams that we've spent this whole thing talking about, the Central Division. I want to talk about the Central Division as a whole a little bit, because it's one of the, I think... The Central and the Northwest are the two most interesting divisions in the league to me. And because they're just, like, all five of the teams in the Central, I feel like, I mean, some of them are more long shots than others. I don't know if Milwaukee's a playoff team, but, like, you could talk me into there being a universe where they are. Indiana, I could see going either way. I really feel like Detroit might be the fourth best team in the East.
I agree,
like,
with
Cleveland
you.
Cleveland pretty clearly, and then I think the next two in some order is probably Boston and Toronto. I really like Detroit as the next one. Actually.
No, I do too. I mean, they were, even though they got swept by the Cavs, they were very, very impressive to me in that first round series.
They played them tough.
They did.
I think they got blown out one game, but they played them tough for, I think, three of those four games in that first round.
Yeah, and they were just very, very, like, energetic and not intimidated by what the Cavs were doing. I mean, Stanley Johnson literally was talking smack to LeBron.
I love him.
Yeah, he's awesome. Like, he's only going to get better, and Drummond's probably only going to get better, and
Stan's such a good
coach. Oh, he's perfect for that team. And I mean, they got freaking Boban, like, to unleash now, which is just amazing.
I actually really like the John Lure pickup for them, too. But when you had kind of seen the rumors leading into free agency that they were maybe going to go after Ryan Anderson because he was a Stan guy from the Orlando days, when you consider Ryan Anderson's health history and the fact that he got $20 million a year from Houston, like, getting John Lure, who basically does the same things and is younger and maybe not as good as peak Ryan Anderson but doesn't have the health history, and they got him for, like, half the amount of money that the Rockets got Ryan Anderson for. I love that.
Yeah, and plus he's not quite as bad on defense as Ryan Anderson is. The Pacers, to me, are also really interesting. I don't think their ceiling's quite as high, and I really don't – I have questions. Like, I'm not really all in on the Nate McMillan thing just because he hasn't been head coach in a while, and Larry Bird wanted change, quote-unquote, but then he picked a guy who's on the staff. And then Monta Ellis at shooting guard. I'd like Monta Ellis. Like, I will forever – be a fan, and I think he has his uses, but I'm not sure he's like.
Well, he does have it all.
But it's like, is he the right two guard for this team? It's like, I would almost want to see CJ Miles playing with the starting lineup. I think they're going to roll with, just because he actually can space the floor for Paul George and for Jeff Teague to attack the rim and to not leave everything on Miles Turner's shoulders to kind of create more space for everybody.
Well, the Pacers, the Nate McMillan angle of it is interesting because I'm from Portland originally, and like, I grew up a Blazer fan, and I was there during like the whole time when Nate was there, you know, during like the Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge years, and they were really good those years. They had, you know, among the best offenses in the league in terms of efficiency, but they also had, like, I think for 5 years in a row, they had like the 29th or 30th fastest paced offense in the league. And what Larry said when he let Frank Vogel go, what Larry Bird said, was that he wanted to play faster. And so I just, like, it seemed like it didn't really make sense. But then I actually got a chance to talk to Paul George a little bit about this this summer when the USA team came through Chicago as part of their exhibition tour before they went down to Rio. I asked him, like, hey, so Larry said he wanted to play faster. Like, what do you think about the Nate McMillan hire? And then Paul George said, and I'm like, obviously this is what he's going to say, because he's not going to say, yeah, I don't like this. Right. But, like, he said that he thinks that Nate played that way because of the personnel that he had in Portland at the time with, you know, Brandon Roy, who's kind of more of an isolation player, and, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge, who at the time was, you know, trying to be more of a post-up guy. As opposed to, like, he thinks that he's not so inflexible that he's not going to be able to adapt his coaching philosophy to what the personnel is. So he seemed pretty optimistic that it's going to work. I really like, you know, obviously Paul George was, for all the talk about his comeback this year during the Olympics, like, obviously because the injury was during a USA thing a couple of years ago, he was as good as he's ever been last year.
Yeah, and I have...
Miles Turner is so good. He might be, like... Outside of, like, obviously Porzingis and Towns, like, the very top guys, he might be a top five rookie from last year's class, just from what we've seen already.
Yeah, and I would agree. And with George, I almost think that this is the year he fully puts it all together, just because I think the first couple years he was good on those Indiana teams with Lance and everything. He faded a little bit. And last year, his numbers declined a little bit as the season went on in certain aspects, and he just looked tired.
And you could say, okay, well, that's just because he... was coming back from the injury, but then he was so good in Rio.
Right,
too.
So I'm thinking he gets the Olympic bounce. He's got a full year removed from the coming back from the leg injury. He can pace himself a little bit, and he has a pretty good supporting cast that he can lean on a little bit. I mean, Jeff Teague's very good. Miles Turner can definitely take on a bigger role, especially if they want to push him in that way. And if they really need to on certain nights, I mean, they have Al Jefferson, who's going to struggle on defense, but they can throw the ball to him off the bench on certain nights and just let him go score inside against opposing teams. I'm very, very intrigued by Paul George. I wouldn't ever put money on him or bet on him to be an MVP this year, just because I have other picks. But to me, he's like a dark horse candidate to just be, like, very, very good all year and be in that discussion, like, in fifth place or something like that.
I don't disagree with this. How would you rank the five the other four? Because obviously Cleveland is number one, and they're in a completely different level from any of the other four teams. How would you rank the other four teams in the Central?
It's tough, just because I have a lot of questions about the bottom three. But I go Cleveland, obviously, like you said. I'd go Detroit two.
Yeah.
I lean Indiana three right now, just because I think the upside there.
You can talk me into Indy or Chicago.
Yeah.
At 3 or 4.
Yeah, and I would go Chicago 4, and then I go the Bucks 5, just because I'm not quite sure on them yet, and I think they're so young, and I almost don't know if I care if they're at the bottom. Just like they might be decent enough to still win a decent amount of games. I just think when I look at them versus I look at Chicago, I at least think the Bulls have guys that have won and know how to win, and the Bucks are going to have some growing pains. Giannis is going to struggle as a point Giannis. Jabari is going to have to figure some things out as a 3-point shooter.
You're going to have to figure out what the hell they're going to get out of Thon.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and then what do you get out of point guard? I mean, I'm not a big Michael Carter Williams guy, and so is Dele your best point guard as a quasi two? And you know, what do you do with Greg Monroe? I mean, there's these questions I have about them that I think they have to figure out. And at least the Bulls, they have Wade, they have Butler, they have Taj Gibson. I really love Bobby Portis.
Right, their guys are all more. All more
exactly.
All more,
you can depend on them more. I can't depend on the Bucks.
I would tend to agree with that. So, I mean, yeah, this is going to be a real interesting division. And obviously the Cavs are going to be one of the most interesting teams to watch as the defending champions. The Bulls are going to be more interesting to watch from a sense of, like, is this crazy hashtag three alphas experiment going to work, or is it all going to blow up in their faces by December?
I have one last question for you about the Cavs that I just been asking everybody. Sure. And I think,
what's that?
If you had to pick one team in the East that would be most likely to beat the Cavs, who would it be?
Is this based on what the current?
Oh, that's interesting. Take this wherever you want.
Because I feel like the answer is probably Boston. Just because, like, as currently constructed, I don't think the Celtics can beat the Cavs in a series. But the Celtics also, out of all the teams that could compete with the Cavs in the East, they're the one that has the pieces to get a deal done, to get a second guy, whether that's, you know, I don't think the Bulls are going to trade Jimmy after what they did this offseason, bringing in Rondo and Wade. But if, you know, if they decide to trade Jimmy Butler, or if the Pacers implode and decide to trade Paul George, or whoever the next guy is going to be available, the Celtics have a lot of assets to get it done. So if they get what some other frontline guy like that and pair them with, like, Al Horford or Isaiah Thomas and whoever else they still have after the trade, then you're looking at a team that might be able to compete with the Cavs. But as presently constructed, I don't think anybody's
going to. I'd agree with that. And I think the other thing about the Celtics that I like and then makes me put them above Toronto is that they have guys that could just throw at LeBron and Kyrie and make them work. I mean, LeBron and Kyrie are going to score. But if Kyrie has to be guarded by Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley for seven games, he's going to have to work. And Jay Crowder's going to defend LeBron and Jurepko, and everybody's going to defend LeBron. And, like, it's... they actually have the guys to just throw bodies at them in a way I don't think any other team in the East does. And that the Pistons can do it for LeBron, but not Kyrie. And, like,
The Pistons are a year away. I think they're going to be really good. I think they're going to be a really good regular season team that nobody's going to want to play in the first round. But I think it's more of like a, like, I think they're a year away from seriously being thought of in that real, like, that upper echelon of, like, conference finals contender. I could see them getting the second round this year, but, like, I think they're a year
away. Yeah, I agree with you, and I think it's just, I like Toronto. I'm a big Lowry guy. I think he's so fun, I love the bromance between Lowry and DeRozan, and I just like that team, but I just don't look at them and think, after seeing them play in the playoffs, that I think, oh, they have what it takes to be the Cavs. I think in a perfect world, Boston could. And then, like you said, it might depend on them getting another guy, whether that's, you know, Paul George, or if it's Blake Griffin, or if it's Boogie.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah.
It's going to be interesting to watch. This was a good conversation. We should do this again before the Bulls actually play
absolutely.
The Cavs in the regular
absolutely.
Season. This was fun. Remember, so follow me on Twitter @Hyken. Follow my co-host on Twitter @CodyWesterland for Locked On Bulls.
You can find me on Twitter @CWMWrites.
Right, and then subscribe to Locked On Bulls. Subscribe to Locked On Cavs on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, everywhere you can get podcasts. Leave us both 5-star reviews. Make sure you leave lots of 5-star reviews. And, you know, we'll catch you guys next time.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.